Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. And yes, we're still doing it at AM 1570 over on the radio dial. And of course, Luke will be out in Owings Mills all week. I will be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour yet again. Cooper's North, new location. I'm going for the crab cake. I might get a burger, but I'm really going for the gumbo. We'll be there on Friday. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. We'll have some Raven scratch-offs to give away, a Goodwill win donation, and our friends. And big reminder, we're in the middle of it. Restaurant week all over the state of Maryland. Please support local, take care of local people. We got a lot of local businesses, owners, chefs, service people in the industry counting on a big, big week. Go out there, take care of your people, and let them show off for you and have a good time. In some ways, and I know this can be dangerous, that when we get sad, we eat a lot, certainly this week might be one of those weeks. Dennis, I would say that I did a lot of purple therapy here. On Monday afternoons and Monday mornings, it's despite what Chad Steele might think, it's how I cut my teeth. It was 4-12 and blown games and Vinny Testaverde and believing in tomorrow and believing in integrity and Eric Zier and Ted Marchabrota and Jim Harbaugh long before there was John Harbaugh. But I ain't never seen nothing like what we seen on Sunday, right? And I know you were out at the game, and Do tell, because I tell you what, that was an incredible amount of energy to be up three touchdowns for everyone on an 80-degree day, and then having to walk out of there and find traffic at the end of that one. I can't imagine, Dan.
I got to tell you, Ness, I was highly entertained. I saw 82 points. I saw some history being made by the Ravens and by the Dolphins, and you know what? Strangely enough, I wasn't upset about the loss. Maybe it's my age these days. Look, these guys are multimillionaires. They jump into their $100,000 plus vehicles after the game. They go home to their lives as we go home to our lives. But I had about a party of 10, an entourage of about 10 of us, and it was really unbelievable. They had, I believe, a 1.3% chance of losing this game, a 98.7% chance of winning heading to the fourth quarter. And it was just really just an unbelievable sight. The way the Dolphins came down the field, it looked like they were running a 7-on-7 drill. And not for the life of me, I don't know why we didn't play maybe a prevent defense the last couple of drives. But lots of blame to go around for sure.
Well, and certainly in the aftermath, Luke asked the question about the secondary and what's going on back there. And look, I wrote about it, right? I have a new columnist. Please go out and read it. I'm trying to get it up. By the time we've been waiting all day on Sunday night, I'm trying to like post it right then. So It's up by about 8 o'clock, 8:30 every Sunday. At least I'm trying. We'll see how I go. I mean, you know, I'm 2 for 2. But I would say this in the aftermath for me, I'm wondering if they have enough good players, Dennis, right? I mean, when your lead mechanics are out and your lead salespeople are, listen, Marlon Humphrey not on the field, Ronnie Stanley not on the field, obviously the running game not on the field in the way that you'd want it to be, passing game kind of shining to some degree, and then the fatigue factor of having 30-somethings play 50 and 60 and 70 snaps and finding out that maybe Marcus Peters' 50th snap isn't as good as his 12th. Same thing with Houston, same thing with Owa, even the young guys. There just feels to me right now, in the aftermath of this with Patriots and Bills ahead, I'm starting to say, who's going to be on the field? Who are the players that they're putting out there besides Lamar Jackson and Mark Andrews?
I think the only thing worse than week one overreaction is week two overreaction. We still don't know how good this team or how bad this team is. Same thing with the Dolphins. The Dolphins, they could end up being a juggernaut. This could be their year. We saw they had a fantastic defense last year. The offense, not so much. And now they have so much speed at wide receiver. Those guys can flat out fly. So we'll see what happens. They're going to finish someplace between 1-16 and 16-1. That's the only guarantee that we have. But let's see how they come back against the Patriots next week. But I'm not ready to give up the ship after this loss.
Well, as I pointed out, they had a 3-touchdown lead, and they slobber-knockered the Dolphins for the first at 3:30. John Harbaugh, the undefeated Ravens. Lamar was perfect. Lamar went left. Lamar went right until the ball went over the secondary's head. And you're like, who's that guy? Who's out there wearing Jimmy Smith jersey?
Yeah, number 22. That was hard to miss, right? But and again, I don't understand how you let those guys get behind you. I don't know how you don't play cover two, cover three against these speedy receivers. Let them come down the field in 7-10 yard increments. Don't give up 50 and 60 yard touchdowns. That was the most unbelievable part. But the offense was not without fault. They couldn't convert some crucial fourth down plays. The running game, I believe, that produced 28 yards. On 14 carries, if you take away Lamar Jackson's carries. So that offensive line still continues to be a problem. Defensive line, you had one sack and two quarterback hits. And with those kind of stats, you're not going to win very many games, no matter who you're playing against.
Dennis Colatzos is my guest. I will be his guest on Thursday. And of course, if you're glued in on the WNSD tech service, Luke's got you covered there with injuries. Who's going to play? Who's not going to play? We'll see where we are with Marlon Humphrey. And in the aftermath of the game, and the Means injury was terrible on the backside of the local kid last week. And being said, let's stay to defense just for a minute, Dennis, because listen, it's all interconnected, right? If you can run the ball, as I wrote in my column this, you wouldn't have this problem, right? Not being able to run the ball in the fourth quarter, I don't care who you are. It's a prescription to not do well. I mean, even those weird Colts teams where Peyton Manning was calling at your defense when he's out there in the fourth quarter, they ran the ball. They had to run the ball, right? I mean, because it can't just be matriculate, we're going to pass. They don't pass that efficiently. They don't pass that well. Lamar's getting better, but just the defense itself and where they are with Wink last year and letting him run off to the now 2-0 Giants. He's deodorized and smells good, right? But what the calls were, to your point, with the personnel that they had and where the fatigue level was to say, we're not getting to him. So we better play backside here. We better tackle what's in front of us while we still have a 3-touchdown lead, 2-touchdown lead, 1-touchdown lead, right?
Yeah, Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, they both command the double coverage, and it was just the blown coverages on the back end. Of course, Marlon Humphrey was playing with a groin pull, so he was limited, missed a lot of time in the second half. You pointed out Marcus Peters. He looks rusty. He first game back, and he's chasing these guys. And I think Next Gen Stats said the Ravens defensive backs backpedaled for over 6,000 yards, the most yards the teams had backpedaled since sometime last year. So when you're doing that, you're on your heels, you're getting punched in the mouth, and maybe this team, the Dolphins, are just a bad matchup with the Ravens. Now, if they came out with that late in the game, they came out with that 7-man front with the 4 defensive backs, and the Ravens couldn't move the ball again. So they didn't use that the entire game until very late. And again, the Ravens once again stumbled, couldn't get a first down when they needed to. Just one first down would have perhaps changed the outcome of this game.
Well, okay, so getting first downs and running the ball and where they are and the fact that their backup center is playing a starting role as a left tackle is, I mean, if you would have told me when Ronnie Stanley got hurt 2 years ago, and I said this to Luke, I don't want to sound too wise on the radio because I put all my column thoughts together by 8 o'clock and then the rest of it's just meanders and drips out onto the internet. But I said to Luke, the day that Ronnie Stanley went down, and I know you and I did radio the day after. That was 2 years ago, right? We're all living in the plague. There's nobody at the games. There's all this going on, right? The minute that happened, I'll never forget, my wife and I were eating a meal. And I turned to my wife in the middle of the game in the living room, because I don't watch many games on TV, although it's getting to be a trend now. I said to her, they can't win without him. They just can't. They're not going to run the ball the same way without him. And we're 2 years later and 4 tackles later and the off seasons and the Vegas thing last year. And here we are. If you would have told me 2 years ago, they're going to be playing with Patrick McCurry at left tackle, I would have said, who's running the place?
Yeah. I mean, that's a fair statement. And you can't win in this league without a solid left tackle. It's almost impossible. And the fact that they have failed to properly address the offensive line once again, I mean, I have friends calling me, texting me about the offensive line, defensive line. They're giving up on Kyle Hamilton already. And I'm like, God, it's way too early to give up on this young man. But they're watching George Karlaftis over there, defensive end for the Chiefs, putting pressure on the quarterback in a game where the Ravens, again, they hit him. They hit Tua twice. They sacked them once. So it starts and ends with the trenches, Ness. And if they're going to invest $250,000 on Lamar Jackson, it doesn't make sense to do so without addressing the offensive line at the same time. And in this year's draft, the offensive linemen are not going to, they're not very good. It's a very shallow class. So they have to go out and maybe get a starting left tackle. That's also going to cost them a ton of money. So this thing is just compounding the injuries and perhaps some of the drafting mistakes by the front office.
Well, it's also a thing where you want to road great, right, in that Marshall Yanda sort of way. And then you're saying, well, we're going to pay this kid to be special with his feet and with his arm. And he's gotten so much better as a passer, as advertised. Every year he gets better as a player, right? Forget the contract negotiation, his style of play. I think he now understands he can't have his leg broken. I don't think he liked watching football on the outside last year. Mm-hmm. And then having to eat it all off season and maybe sign a lesser contract because of how the end went last year. But certainly no Gus Bus, no real feature back, right? Like that we can speak of. And if you had a feature back, would that be effective running behind Patrick McCary on the left side? Now, they slobber knocked a little bit on the right side, overload over there. They have Ricard, who's been phenomenal. Boyle can't get on the field, right? So, and they have these tight ends that they can create matchup issues on down and distance. And it feels like Bateman might be a difference maker, right? Might be a guy that would be the Tariq Hill, a different kind of player, but mm-hmm. a guy that you have to game plan, or a guy that can beat your ass, a guy that can get 11 balls from Lamar 1 week and go 158 and just flat out beat you because you can't match up with him. But they have to create those matchups and down and distance, and they have to create those matchups and down and distance by running the football with some semblance of a feature back that's not number eight, right? That they're in second and four, three, two, first down, where the places they were when they could road grade, but they do want to pass block more now, and they do want to distribute the ball more. And Lamar has shown that he's playing a different style of football this year. Results be damned, running game be damned, he is playing differently. And his ability to see, if I get one block here, I'm gone, and see that at the line of scrimmage and make that play and make that read on a 75-yard touchdown that only he can make because only he's looking for it, because nobody's ever walked up to the line of scrimmage. Peyton Manning never walked up to the line of scrimmage and thought, oh, if I get the right gap over here, I'm going to race to the end zone. Like, there's been five quarterbacks that ever line up that even think that way, really.
Oh, no question about it, Ness. I think at the end of the third quarter, the dominant narrative was Lamar Jackson is making money. He did nothing in the fourth quarter to squelch that. He's still making big money. And through two games in, I mean, he's looking very much the part of a $250 million guaranteed deal of a quarterback. He did nothing in this game to hurt himself. He 11th 100-yard game, set a record for that, most 100-yard games by quarterback already in only his fifth year. So he's making big money, and you can bet he's going to bail. He's going to slide early. He's going to get out of bounds. He's not going to risk injury. And still, as you mentioned, he can still see the gaps in the defense where he can take off for a 75-yard touchdown. So he's a special player. I'm glad he's passing the ball first. The sad thing is the Ravens right now can't run the ball. They can't run clock. When they're playing an explosive offense such as the Dolphins, they can't shorten up the game. And that's a big, big problem.
Well, and again, let's go back to my column and where I began, which is, all right, you blame the coordinators and the game plan and whatever, but who are the horses on the courses at this point? Who are the players on the field, and what is their ability to perform? And this would be where all of this Harbaugh health and sports science, and we're feeding them watermelon, and we're flying into 2 a.m, and we're getting on biorhythms and whatever that witchcraft is, right? However that works out, that 32-year-old Justin Houston is a 30-snap player but not a 50 or 60 snap player. And at that point, Dennis, I mean, I know you and I haven't watched a lot of baseball, but there's a reason pitchers don't go out and throw 130 pitches anymore, right? And there's a reason that these pitchers pitch what they pitch and they get their 18, 22 pitches in, whatever it is. Like running horses, 6 furlongs, they don't do it every 5 days anymore like they did back in Guys and Dolls, right? And these players are human. And in fourth quarter, I just saw a gassed unit. I don't want to say not fit. I'm just saying it was 80 degrees. Tyreek Hill was cramping, right? That when you get into that 15th round of the fight, it isn't who's the better fighter in the first round or the second round, right? I mean, and they got had late in the day from fatigue, overuse, not enough plan B, and more than that, not great players on the field to begin with in certain positions.
Well, you lose as a team or you win as a team. That's from the owner to the front office to the coaching staff to the players. Same thing I said last year when we were down in Miami and watched the Ravens lose to the Dolphins. They were the better team that night. They suffocated. Their defense was suffocating. And a good defense travels well. We saw that again, although they let up 38 points to the Ravens. They were the tougher team. They came back, scored 4 touchdowns in 13 minutes, which is unheard of. So give them all the credit in the world and give the Ravens all the blame in the world, whether you want to talk about the secondary, put the blame on the secondary. I mean, at work today, a lot of my coworkers were saying, hey, fire the new defensive coordinator. So they're not going to fire him after
Ravens
game
aren't
two.
Firing anybody in week 2.
No, I mean, Hamilton, he's not a bust after 2 games in the NFL. But again, it's classic week 2 overreaction. It's not unexpected. And for me, I stay off of social media at least one day after the game. So I get rid of all that. I don't have to deal with all that noise and all the knee-jerk reactions by everybody. But just breathe and let's see what happens in week 3 up in Foxborough, which, again, it's going to be a difficult game for the Ravens as the rest of them. There are no easy games in the NFL. The Cleveland Browns found that out when Joe Flacco pinned 31 points on them.
Wasn't that fun?
It was a lot of fun. And one of my Sunday school kids who's not a comedian from back in the day, I did see one social media rant. He was like, hey, we need to trade Lamar Jackson for Joe Flacco. Bring Flacco back to Baltimore. So you talk about a classic overreaction. That's just one of them.
Well, Dennis will not be overreacting and selling you a vehicle over at Coons Baltimore Ford. He will also be here on Thursday from 3 until 5, getting you ready for football. And again on Sunday morning as part of the Sunday Sports Voice. You can find him at D Colazzo Show out on the social media channels, but not on the Sabbath, which is Monday after a loss that he takes his down day. Come back on Tuesday and get the refresher course. Listen. They all lost, right? Every team in the division lost. We got to watch the Bengals go here against the Cowboys, the Browns and the Flacco thing and how much fun that is. Even the Steelers got taken down by the Patriots. So this is going to be one of those. It's so weird to say 10-7, 11-6, because it still doesn't roll off the tongue in that way.
Look, could be 8-9 the way they're going. Who knows? That's the big mystery. But 2 games in, I don't know how anyone can predict where any team's going to finish by the end of the season.
Well, on Thursday, I mean, you're doing your thing and your show in the afternoon. By Thursday night, we got 2 of these guys beating each other up anyway, right? The Browns and the Steelers are playing each other. So that's going to happen. We're all going to get to watch that unfold. There'll be another loser involved in that. But for me, this week and Belichick and then the Bills and how things could go wrong. Right. I mean, you need things to go right. You need to at least survive this, be 2-2. If we're talking about that 10-7, 11 and whatever it's going to be, to me, if the notion is there's a cavalry coming over the hill and that's a busted up running back and a busted up left tackle and now a busted up cornerback, who are your best players? Right. I mean, these aren't just guys. And then you tack on other nicks and dings and injuries and you tack on age with Campbell, Houston, Bynes, Peters, go down the list. I mean, Peters, you talk about ring rust on him. I don't know how you shake that off. And I think there's a whole part of this as all of these teams settle in at 1-1 or 0-2, depending on if you're in Cleveland or not, that you settle in on this and you say these are like preseason games, except they're not. They count because this was a less sloppy kind of week in flags and penalties and that kind of nonsense, more focused in that way, but certainly much more football oriented on an 80-degree day where you just don't roll out and say, well, Lamar's better than Tua and we're better than this. And we're last year with no, man. Once it gets to the fourth quarter, even if it's a 3-touchdown game, if you get fatigued, if you get outmatched, if you get outplayed on one play, like Lamar doing to them what they managed to go all last year not doing, even getting their ass kicked most of the day on Sunday, they didn't just come up to the line of scrimmage and let him run 75 yards and chase him and break their ankles. You know what I mean? They had even made that mistake and came back from it. There's a nice lesson to be learned on the Miami side, and I'm glad that Lamar pointed that out voluntarily in the aftermath of all of it, saying, we've come back and won games three down, you know, and it feels good. And we need to make sure that never happens around here again. We need to button this up. And that's a Harbaugh. I call him Coach Hardass. You know, that's a tradition for him that this week, that these losing weeks don't turn into, oh my God, we lost to the Bills. We're 1-3.
Yep.
Heads are going to roll around here.
Yeah. Well, that's the position they put themselves in. They lose up in Foxborough, then they come back lose to the Bills. They're going to be 1-3. That's what they're staring down at. I'll take 2-2 after four games. I think any Ravens fan in their right mind will take 2-2 after four games. So this is a huge game early on in the season. It could just be the beginning of a skid for this team. I don't even know who they play past the Bills, and I really don't care because they have to take care of business. What's in front of them? And as you mentioned, the Dolphins now have to feel great. They're never going to be out of it. That's going to be their mindset. They can always come back. Conversely, for the Ravens, no lead is safe. We can't go into the fourth quarter anymore with a 3-touchdown lead and think that we're going to come out ahead. So the dynamic has changed for both of these organizations at this point.
Tell everybody what's going on over at your place, because you turn everything off on Monday and focus. I know it's been nice for me to come back and focus on what I'm doing here is the normalcy of an abnormal weirdness of watching games on TV for me. But this time of year, the kids are back in school, families are getting back together, things are going on. There is some normalcy after a couple of years of weirdness with COVID to business, right? And you're still there doing what you've always done, but differently, much like everybody is, right?
We are. You know, one thing I noticed at the stadium, Nestor, was it wasn't full. It wasn't packed. It didn't have the same energy, I thought, in seasons past. You know, I went to a big tailgate, saw some Ravens players milling around. But the stadium, I thought it was loud, but it wasn't loud enough. It wasn't back when we had the collegiate type of an atmosphere, that fervor that we'd captured with this organization. I was disappointed by the lack of fans at the stadium. I thought there were way too many empty seats, particularly for a home opener.
See, I didn't see that because television didn't portray it as having
I was there. I was there, and particularly at kickoff. And at halftime, forget about it. The stadium, I mean, the Miami offense was able to go down the field with zero crowd noise. No one was cheering for the defense. They were out getting their beers and drinks and food. So I didn't like that part of it either.
All right. Well, I mean, that's an interesting observation that I don't have from not being there. I mean, look, it's an observation I've had for – you know, since the Wembley knee, right? Like, I had this famous picture of that game, and that was the Joe Flacco forearm shiver Kiko Alonso hit, right? It was a Thursday night game. And was it a Monday or Thursday? But whatever it was there. And the amount of Dolphins fans behind me in my section, it was just, there were 35 Dolphins fans sitting behind me. I had never, ever experienced anything like that in our stadium ever. And since then, it never kind of came back to the way it was. And then, you know, I have the whole Chad Steele episode. You can go read my side of that. However, but I'm not in the seats, but this feeling around the seats and how many people would be hitting me for 15 years. People would hit me and say, can you get me tickets? And I'd say, I had these 10, 12, 15 tickets available down near where I was to kind of keep Dolphins fans and Steelers fans and Browns fans and Bengals fans and like all of that away. It was all purple all the time, per safe management, I might add, that the complexion of all of it's changed, right? Like, strangely enough, I've looked to see how much tickets are, right? Like, you know, I know what it costs me to go to the games. Tickets held at about $100. Kind of sort of for the game the other day. Tickets in Foxborough this week. I thought, yeah, maybe it's a $75 get in there. No, it's $200 to get in. Foxborough is on fire. You can't get tickets. Here next week, because the Bills are going to bring, I mean, the Bills are going to bring 15 or 20,000 fans, I think, right? Like, it's going to be as insidious a group coming in because they party. They're really good. They've waited so long to be good. Blah, 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 Black Doug Flutie, all of that. That I feel like that Bills game is going to be a different kind of environment than the one you're talking. Their seats won't be empty. They'll have a Bills fan in there who paid $200 and came down from Seneca Valley.
There were quite a bit of there was a good representation for Dolphins fans in the stadium. I don't know if you can hear them on TV, Nestor, but with about 5 minutes left in the game, you can hear "Let's go Dolphins" chant. The Ravens fans tried to drown them out, and it was a battle. I mean, it wasn't decisive in either direction, but the fact that they were able to get a chant going in our stadium, I thought was concerning.
Standards have changed, bro. I don't know what else to say. If there's nothing else that I'm not saying out loud, it's just things have changed. And that's not the aftermath of a 3-touchdown, blown game. It's just more like the expectations have also changed too, of where they are with Lamar. And when I see the union folks, the Richard Sherman's out on Twitter talking about, like, how in the world did the Ravens allow him to get to this point and not have something done, and have that be a backdrop for all of this? Because it really is. It's kind of a backdrop for all of it everywhere he goes, right? Like, the fact that, are they going to keep him around? What's it going to cost? All of that. And more than that, can he win? And are they giving him – they've entered a whole different conversation if the question is they're not doing enough to help him win.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Well, here's a question we asked last year of Lamar before he got hurt. Same question we can ask after the Sunday's game. Where would they be without Lamar Jackson right now? You can't tell me that Tyler Huntley would have put up all those points against that Miami Dolphins defense. There's not a shot. So his value continues to increase. And if I'm the Ravens brass, I'm doing whatever I can to keep him happy and healthy, including making him a big commitment financially and also investing more assets in that offensive line, getting him some young players, a left tackle that's dependable, available. Same thing. You got a young center now. I don't know how much juice Zeitler has, but they really need to do a better job of addressing the offensive line. In fact, I would address the offensive line first before any other position group on this team. You've got to keep them upright. You've got to have guys that can open up holes for the running backs and get this offense going.
Well, 4th-and-1's a whole different game now, too.
Oh,
than
my.
It used to be, right?
Oh, 4th-and-1 is just the way they played that, misplayed it, et cetera. And the referees with the spots and whatnot, and even the Mike Gesicki touchdown, that the tight end, that was a lot of our fans wanted to see Harbaugh challenge that. Don't know where his foot landed on the line. Couldn't see it there at the stadium.
It was pretty decisive. And as Harbaugh said in the post game, the official said he got a good look. He was in.
Was he in? Oh, he was in. Okay, so then I'm sour grapes. But again, they were. Lamar Jackson had a 4th-down run at the goal line. I don't know how they can tell whether he was in or not. I don't know how you make that call, Ness.
They had bad angles, then they had one good angle, and it was pretty clear he wasn't in. I didn't think the officiating was wacky at all. Matter of fact, in real time, it looked like Marcus Williams didn't make that one play with his two feet dragging a foot, and it was very apparent. I mean, watching the game on replay at home now, I mean, I see the replays pretty quickly that I don't have to dispute something that I would have had I been on the rail in 5-13 and the team refusing to show me whatever they, selective, edited, censored, literally censored real-time highlights, right? Like, literally, right? That I'm seeing it better. I missed my game experience, but I didn't miss the traffic afterwards, certainly, and I had, cold refreshments at a reasonable price and a warm place to go to the bathroom and all that. Are you in for the year, or was you went to the game?
No, I went to the game. I have some other obligations, some travel obligations later on in the year. I would like to make every game if I can. I just can't do it because, again, of what I just mentioned. I have other obligations. But if it weren't for that, I'd go. It was a lot of fun. It was entertaining. As I said, I saw 82 points. I didn't see a 10-3 ball game or 10-9 or something like that. So it was a lot of fun until the last second ticked off the clock.
So you're saying it was a lot more exciting than like a 0-0 EPL matchup.
Yeah, exactly. So I was entertained. I thought I got good value for the money that I paid. I had a lot of fun. It's just at my age, look, I don't live and die by their losses anymore. There was a time maybe 10, 20 years ago where I'd be really upset on a Monday after a game like that, after a loss like that. But there's more to life than that. And look, you let it go quickly and you move on. And I moved on right away. I laughed about it. I thought, you know what? This is crazy. It's insane. It's historic. So we just ended up on the wrong side of that decision.
Let me tell you what. The day the Oilers lost to the Bills and Rasig was over at my house on Kane Street watching that, the next day I didn't say it's historic, so it's okay. As I sit here in Houston Oilers colors with you. By the way, I found my Elvin Bethea jersey last week going through
some
stuff. So
what's it, number 78? What's his number? 78?
65.
65. There you go.
Yeah, Elvin Bethay. Dennis Colazzo's is the Colazzo Show. He is one of the good ones, as they say. You can find him here Thursday from 3 until 5 doing the Sunday Sports Voice. Now just the Dennis Colazzo Show, and find him out. It really is interesting. We have a different countenance about all this 20 years later, right? Because this is. I remember season-ending losses. I'll still go back to 06 and that Manning loss, which still
that was really, really bad. Really
then
bad.
There's
really
Lee,
bad.
Lee Evans and Cundiff, and then there was the blown game. I see Stone on the back of a Ravens jersey. I don't just think of Jeff Stone from the Orioles, but I think of the Stone, Darren Stone, that had the penalty. And the,
sure.
So, I mean, I go through the history of all of this. I would agree with you that certainly me being parachuted out or literally thrown out of the plane – that I view it differently, but I also don't think anyone would want me to take phone calls all day today for the next 18 hours, fire the coach, fire this guy, bench Lamar Jackson, like all of the nonsense. I can't relate to it in that way anymore, in that way, you know?
No, I would agree.
The glasses on. I love that.
100%. It's still purple colored. Two games in. Keep the faith. Hopefully they'll beat the Patriots. If not, you have almost a must-win game against the Buffalo Bills.
Talk so much about leadership, you and I, and about who's running the place. And, you know, this for me, Harbaugh, when I see 15th season now, I'm like, they'll figure this out. I mean, they'll play well in New England, as well as they can, but they have some deficiencies. Dennis, man, I'm looking forward to seeing you on social media this week and visiting with you on Thursday. Keep purple glasses on. You're doing all right.
You got it. I appreciate it. Thank you.
He's got real purple glasses. You can find him at a D. Colazzo Show. He'll be here on Thursday on the radio without the purple glasses, but maybe more fun on Security Boulevard. He's Dennis. I'm Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore positive.